Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR in Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It has happened again. A police traffic stop has ended in the death of a black man, according to police in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. 20-year-old Dante Wright was pulled over yesterday for expired tags. During the stop, police discovered Wright had an outstanding misdemeanor warrant and attempted to arrest him. He attempted to get back in the car, and that's when he was shot. Today, Brooklyn Center Police Chief Tim Gannon held a news conference.
This appears to me, from what I've viewed and the officer's reaction and distress immediately after, that this was an accidental discharge that resulted in the tragic death of Mr. Wright.
Tonight, we look at the facts of the incident and try to figure out what happened. My guests are Justin Hansford, Executive Director of the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center at the Howard University School of Law, and Ron Hampton, a former D.C. police officer and former Executive Director of the National Black Police Association. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR. Or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ron, Justin, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Ron, I want to start with you. This looks like a horrific comedy of errors from beginning to end. What did you see in this police stop?
I would agree with you. I think the police officer was wrong. It looked like that there was a great deal of intention in the process in terms of what it was that she was doing, as well as how she handled the stop. And this whole idea that that it's accidental because she thought she had a taser versus a gun. There's a taser and a gun are two different things. They feel very different. One is on, if you're a right-hand person, you wear it on the left. If you're left-hand, you wear it on the right. So you had to cross your body to get it. It's a different feel altogether. So I'm not buying that. And as a matter of fact, they need to look for a new chief of police because he wasn't living up to the way I think a chief of police should respond in these kind of issues.
Well, let's back up to the beginning of the video from the very beginning when you had the officers approaching the vehicle and the subject. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even call him a suspect, but right. he was a citizen who was pulled over, expired tags. Let's talk about that for just a moment. It may seem obvious, but for some people who have never had that happen to them, do police, if your tags are expired, do police officers have the right to pull you over?
Well, I would raise that question myself, and especially in light of the fact that we, like here in the District of Columbia, because we're still in the COVID era, DMV isn't open. It hasn't been open. So there are cars riding around the city with expired tags because they have applied for their tags and haven't gotten them. And I can imagine that is happening all over the country because governments in these cities and counties and whatnot are essentially shut down. So that is a process that raises a great deal of questions. I know here in the District of Columbia, and I served I'm still serving on the D.C. Police Reform Commission, and that was one of the areas that we suggested eliminating police eliminating police officers out of the role of enforcing traffic violations and turning it back over to the Department of Transportation because we have civilians who do that job now when it comes to Uber, taxi cabs, and all of that.
I wanted to start this conversation. When I started the conversation, I said, let's talk about the facts. So we can't talk about what we don't know. The question was, if you have expired tags, COVID or not, or before COVID, if you are right. driving around on expired tags and a cop sees that, does he have the legal right to pull you over?
I would say yes, because it happens to be something that that law enforcement enforces, that you drive a car and your car has to be properly registered and tagged.
Mm-hmm. So, Justin, yeah. from your perspective, yeah. when we look at this video, he's pulled over and the officers then realize that upon checking his ID that he has a misdemeanor warrant. And he tries to get back in the car. Where are we from your perspective at this point?
Well, certainly one thing I want to add here to just be an amendment to the last statement.
Sure.
Yes, police officers do have the right to pull people over for expired tags, but they don't have to have that right. That's not something that is guaranteed.
No, you're right.
That they yeah. should have. And especially in 2021 when they have technology where they could easily take a picture of somebody's expired tag and send them a ticket in the mail without ever being in a situation where they feel like they will have to kill that person. There's no justifiable reason why they should have that right. So yes, currently that right is likely to exist in Minneapolis as it does in D.C. Howard University is involved in Georgetown University is involved in writing reports on police reform that echo the recommendation that was just stated. There's really no reason why that right should exist for police officers. That over 18 million traffic stops in the country each year. African Americans are more than 20% more likely to be stopped around the country. Here in D.C., this data is that we are over 75% of the people who are stopped, over 80% of people who are stopped and not even given a warning. And we're 47% of the population here in D.C. So that point right there is, there are two different questions. The current state of the law.
Which is what we want to focus on. I want to focus right. on what happened, what went wrong. We can, the reform issue is an important issue. But the reform issue, as it stood yesterday afternoon with Dante Wright, did not help him, nor did it help the police officers. And as it relates to the facts of this particular incident, Justin, what went wrong?
Certainly. Well, you know, in terms of the incident, we have to look at precedent. And, you know, I have to say that, you know, we have, I definitely flash back to the Oscar Grant case, you know, so well documented in Fruitvale Station. That movie was Michael B. Jordan. And the situations wherein people who are engaged in law enforcement make these deadly mistakes. And as a result of that, the accountability that they face is framed in, you know, sort of like people make mistakes, and it's unavoidable that when you're in these interactions, mistakes happen. And so that in this particular situation, you do have a dynamic wherein even the police chief and others acknowledge that, you know, there were mistakes made in the interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, so I don't think it's a situation where anyone is similar to the Gossip Grant case. And there's a lot of situations where everybody's going to express regret. But when you look at because of that, when we talk about questions of change and accountability and what happens next, I worry that it gets framed as, because it wasn't intentional, because it wasn't what is recommended, it won't be framed as something that should be a case that calls for dramatic change. It'll just be seen as a blip in the matrix. And that's why I think both myself and Ron went right to the reform question, because these mistakes can't happen. You can't have a mistake. If you're flying an airplane, you can't say, "Whoops, I made a mistake and I'm crashing an airplane."
But,
killing people. Yeah. Some jobs, you can't have mistakes.
And the mayor said today that he would support that the officer be fired. The, I think the point beyond that is whether or not the officer should be prosecuted.
Yeah, correct.
Well, I think so, too. But see, the other part, I think, to your question, Harold, that all too often these kind of incidents, the results of these incidents are exactly what we've seen on top of it. And it's because police have the idea that black men are a danger to police, and police officers stop black men more, and then there's the perception that they're dangerous. So then when it comes to handling them, then it's easy for the police to justify using deadly force, using force and other things that we see. And consequently, the fact of the matter is that when you look beyond the incident in terms of beginning to look into it, there was no justification for even using force or any of that.
Yeah.
And simply for a license tag being expired is no reason. It's not a felony. Even if they say he had a misdemeanor warrant, that's not a felony. So there was no justification for them to come armed and handle it the way that they handled it.
Yeah.
And that's the fact right there.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Dante Wright killing by Brooklyn Center Police in Minnesota yesterday afternoon, and the fallout from today's press conference. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, calling from Dale City, Virginia. Thanks for calling, Lisa. What's on your mind?
Yes, I would just like to say that all of this is just so triggering. It really burdens me a lot. I have nephews that are that age of that young man that was killed for no reason yesterday. And I guess I have a question and a comment.
Go ahead.
My question is, what can we as black people do? Because this is so triggering. I mean, you know, watching the George Floyd trial, that's triggering. I can't even imagine what his family is going through and the people who witnessed it. That's triggering. And then to hear that this happened last night, and then to hear about the lieutenant that almost got killed, a few days ago, it's like so triggering. And it's like, why did they always make mistakes on our lives? Like, why do we always end up dead? You never hear about a white person getting killed and then being like, oh, we meant to use our taser, not the gun. So what can black people do to get past the triggeringness, because it's really burdensome and it's just hard. It's not healthy for us. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa. Anybody want to comment on Lisa's comment?
Yeah, I wanted to make a statement on that. Two things. So the mental health burdens that are put on us by having to be exposed to these videos and these controversies have gone beyond the phase of just being anecdotal. We actually now have research that has been conducted, which proves that there's a increase in depression, an increase in anger. The actual research was done in 2019 and 2020, showed that there are an additional, if you add it up across the country, an additional 55 million. Poor mental health days that take place in a month, between 1 month and 3 months after each one of these viral video takes place in the African American community. Just to contextualize that, diabetes it causes an additional 75 million poor mental health days. So it's literally a public health crisis on the same level, major illnesses in terms of the way it's affecting our community, and much more than other communities, obviously, because, as you know, you can't avoid it. It's on every channel. You also can't avoid interacting with police officers. They're all over the place. So it's not like a situation where there's violence and you can protect yourself. You know, you can't fight back. There's so many reasons that it's legitimate to feel a great deal of stress and a great deal of dis-ease each time one of these happens. And so that is something that we need to start to acknowledge and to give ourselves the space to process and to recover from, each one of these situations and know that it's not simply some sort of personal weakness, but it's a documented mental health ill effect that is taking place each time that we see one of these. And we can't, and as we said earlier,
you can't unsee it.
Yeah, yeah. You can't unsee it. You can't go back in time, but you can, take space for yourself. If you do have access to therapy or mental health resources, you can find ways to access that. And remember that it's a legitimate thing to feel stressed by these situations.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to John calling from Maryland, Jeffrey calling from D.C., and lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Dante Wright killing by Brooklyn Center, Minnesota police yesterday during a traffic stop. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. Don't forget, download 96.3 HD2, the app, to your smartphone. You can hear this program live in its entirety. This discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the killing of 20-year-old Dante Wright yesterday in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. Yes, it has happened again. A black man killed during a traffic stop by police. What do you think? Lines are open. Give us a call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. My guests are Justin Hansford, Executive Director of the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center here at Howard University, the School of Law, and Ron Hampton, former D.C. police officer and former Executive Director of the National Black Police Association. Also, you can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. I want to ask you a quick question before I go back to the phone lines, Justin. And this may be one of those, fine lines as it relates to the law. So if someone has a car accident and they kill someone else, are they charged with involuntary manslaughter, or do they have to, if it's just an accident, were they a little over the speed limit, as opposed to maybe they were drinking, or maybe they were severely speeding? Talk to me about that, and why would that not apply for a police officer in this particular incident?
Well, certainly. Well, that is one of those questions that one of my law students might ask. That's a difficult question. That's really
well. We're all in class right now. Certainly, no right. Question about that.
It's very fact-specific. So when you're talking about, there's a line in the, if it was a person in an accident, a car accident, the legal standard would actually oftentimes in a civil suit be one of negligence. That's what we think about most often. If you're doing something like operating a vehicle that is an activity that could pose this risk of danger, you have a certain standard of care that you must exercise. A reasonable standard of care. So the question is whether a reasonable person essentially would have made that mistake if they were taking care and they were being careful. It's also, there's, we hear the term reckless endangerment bandied about. So it's not just the fact that something is an accident is not the end of the analysis. If you were being careful and an accident took place, there's going to be a different response than if you're being reckless and that accident took place. You could not intend for that outcome to take place in each situation, but the amount of care that you exercise is relevant in determining your liability.
Now, in the case of a police officer, do you believe that in the killing of Dante Wright, mistake or not, and maybe that is the issue, was it a mistake or was it not? Weapon confusion certainly is an issue. It does happen. It doesn't happen a lot, but it only really needs to happen once for it to be deadly problematic. Could she be prosecuted for involuntary manslaughter?
Well, again, we have to learn the facts. I will say that I for myself, and I'll speak for my own self here, I will not say that the statements that she made at the time, saying whoops at the time, or saying taser, taser, and then shooting someone, I don't think that's the end of the story. You know, I have been in situations myself where, you know, I was protesting, and the police officer come up to me and said, he's being aggressive, or they're about to arrest somebody, and I've seen them say, oh,
stop resisting.
Yeah. So people, they mix. It's, I don't know where it comes from, but there are people who are able to make statements in the moment that are not in line with the facts, knowing that those statements will be helpful for them later on. And police officers have done that before. So I'm not saying every police officer does it, but certainly I've seen that before. So those statements don't indicate to me that it's a closed case, that it was a mistake. And I think we'll have to look at the details and the facts of the case, you know, where these weapons were located on her, you know, all these different things that have to be taken into consideration.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. John, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, John. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think that a couple of things here. The chief should definitely be terminated. The officer should be terminated and prosecuted because tasers are a cross-draw weapon. You don't wear it on the same side as the firearm. And you're trained not to shoot at a moving vehicle anyway. So if a person is trying to get away, why are you shooting at a person who is trying to get away? So all the excuses I'm listening to does not make any sense. I think the officer, you cannot make that kind of mistake because someone lost their life. So all the other stuff I'm hearing is not adding up. You can't shoot at someone who's trying to flee away. That means they pose no threat to the officer. And if the person is not using his car to threaten the officer, you should not be shooting in that direction anyways.
Yeah. John, thank you so much. What do you say about that, Ron? We have seen so many cases of someone driving away where police officers have shot at them, people running away where police officers have shot at them. Obviously, case in Charleston, South Carolina, where the officer shot the man in the back who was running away.
Right.
This one,
I
think this one's a little more difficult. The officers who were doing the initial arresting did not have their weapons drawn. It was just one officer. So there are some really difficult pieces to address here.
They are, and it also, some of this depends on department policy. Some of it, there's some cases that case law that exists in some of these cases about fleeing felons, about whether a car is leaving the scene. Does the car represent a danger to you or any other person? So most police departments have policies where you cannot shoot at moving vehicles. And you can't use the excuse that you're standing in front of it. You need to get out of the way. That and then even this idea that somehow or another, because I know in my years I've heard this story about I went to grab my taser but grabbed my gun. I've heard that story before, and sometimes. In the defense of unions, in the defense of police officers, they have their lawyers and other individuals who come up with all of these responses, and they want the police officers to use the responses because then it moves into the area justifying what it is that they have done. When the fact of the matter is that I think that some of that behavior, some of that actions border on criminal behavior. But again, it causes you to have to go into court and argue in court. But there are department policies that address some of this, and then there are court cases, some Supreme Court cases that address when you can use your weapon, when you can't, when it comes to a vehicle as well as to an individual who is running away from you. He or she does not represent a threat to you, then you just can't shoot them.
Jeffrey, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jeffrey. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Go
right ahead. I have a question.
And the question is, if a young black man living in the Washington area, is when you encounter these officers that are extra aggressive or that you can see have that type of intent in mind, how do you deal with that, Mike? I mean, what are you supposed to do exactly?
That's a really good. He's asking, Ron, when you're dealing with an aggressive police officer, let us assume we're talking about a traffic stop. How do you, you know, what are you supposed to do? Because tomorrow, as a matter of fact, we're going to talk more broadly about that issue, the fear of police that many black men and more broadly black people have of law enforcement and what that means to the community. But he asked the question, so go right ahead, Ron.
Well, there's this conversation that takes place in our community at dinner time and other parts of the day where we begin to talk to our men and male and female family members about how to handle police stops. And what we say, I've said this to my daughters, and I know other people have, we want you to be respectful. We want you to, if they ask you a question, to answer your question. If you have a question, there's nothing wrong with you asking them the question, and there should be a response. If you think that something is going down, then you take the officer's name and you take his badge number and all that information. But you can't fight and argue your case on the street at the time that it's happening. And that's the purpose of paying keen attention to what it is that's going on and who the individual is and information about that individual, so then you can talk to a lawyer like the one that's on the phone today that handle these kind of cases, and then you can win your case. But you can't argue and win your case out on the street. That just doesn't make sense. And so that's part of our responsibility, to de-escalate the situation, even if the police officer isn't de-escalating the situation. We want it to end in a way that you can walk away as well as the police officer can walk away also.
Thank you so much for your phone call, Jeffrey. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the killing of Dante Wright in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, near Minneapolis. All of this happening yesterday. And now so many questions about the incident that we saw on police body cam. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Hello. Jabari calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jabari. What's on your mind?
I have three quick points to make.
Sure.
First, we should get the language straight. Police do not have rights. They either have the authority to do something or they don't have the authority to do something.
Okay.
They are paid employees. They can only work within the prescribed boundaries of their particular job description. So we need to say, did this person have the authority? And if they do have some authority, it has to be written. Second, the fundamental question to me is, why did this officer feel the need to shoot this person for, you know, using anything? Because from what I understand, the person wasn't in any active participation of threatening anybody. So why did this officer feel that they had the authority to shoot anything at this person? A gun, a taser, bow and arrows, a slingshot? Why are they trying to shoot this person at all? And the final comment is, the fundamental solution to this, or part of the solution to this, is we have to disarm the police. The police don't need all of these weapons. They don't need these guns. Of course, in London and other places, police don't walk around with lethal weapons, because if they give you a weapon, you're going to use the weapon. And that's what we see over and over. If you give them a toy, they're going to play with the toy.
I would beg to differ on that last part, considering some of the knife attacks and other things that we have seen in London over the past, several years. Yeah, I think, you know, bobbies traditionally have not carried lethal weapons, but I would argue those things have changed. But to your point, to your question, and I'm going to go back to Ron about this, because, you know, in the video, Dante Wright was standing. And the police had pulled out their handcuffs. And you know, I'm now talking about police procedure here, Ron. Once police have decided, have made a decision to arrest you, and you decide to run off, or in jumped back in the car. What is an officer? I'm not talking about what they should do. I mean, what is their training? What are they trained to do when that kind of thing happens?
Well, what they're trained to do that if it's a felon, then you continue to attempt to detain or arrest the person. That's in the felony. If the person is attempting to get away, then you also attempt to capture the person. Now, whether or not you use deadly force or not is, again, and you're authorized to use deadly force in some of those situations, but the fact of the matter is that the person has to, in order for you to use deadly force, the justification would be that the person represents a danger to you or some other citizen. That did not exist in that car. That did not exist in that video.
And to further the point that I think Jabari was asking, if I would argue that if there had been a taser used that was able to subdue Dante Wright, and he were arrested, we would not be having this conversation.
We probably wouldn't, but there would still be, I think, a discussion needed to take place about whether or not, to use Jabari's term, whether or not use of taser was authorized and was it appropriate.
So that goes back to my question for you. How do you determine whether or not to use a taser?
Well, in the training of police officers, they are given examples of when you can use a taser and when you can't. And then there's case law along with policy that addresses that too. Mm-hmm. And I just got through stating some of it. For example, if a person has a gun and they turn away from you and run away from you and they have the gun, never presenting the gun as a threat to you or any other citizen, then you're not justified in shooting that person in the back. Mm-hmm. And there's a case law called Tennessee versus Gardner that lays that out. It was a Supreme Court case out of Tennessee. Now, if the person is had a gun, run away from you, turn to you and point the gun at you, then you're justified and you can use deadly weapon to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm. One final thing about that. The chief was asked during the press conference whether or not a weapon was found in the car. He said no. So again,
it wasn't a weapon involved.
Yeah.
The gentleman was trying to get away. I could see that. The fact of the matter was the warrant was a misdemeanor warrant. Wasn't a felony warrant.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't have been justified or authorized to use deadly force in reference to the retaining the this young kid.
Okay, Jabari, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Justin, let me ask your thoughts about the quick release of this police body cam video. We are seeing, this was done 24 hours after the incident. We are seeing more and more police body cam videos being released more quickly, but still, in some cases, not quickly enough, as in the case of the Windsor, Virginia incident back in December. That incident, that happened in December. This is April. The police lieutenant who was pulled over by the officers in Windsor. So, first of all, your thoughts about how quickly the video was released, and really what determines how quickly a video is released when you're talking about police being involved in an incident with citizens?
That's a great question. Here in D.C., videos have not been released that quickly. I had a client I worked with, Kenethia Austin, whose son was killed, and she fought for over a year to get that video released. Here we had a video released within 24 hours, in Minnesota, and the policies differ greatly from state to state in terms of what is the timing, what is the factor, but almost in every case it is a decision that is the majority of the power to decide that is in the hands of law enforcement or the city. So I can't say specifically what led to this particular quick release of the video, but I do think that the policies that lead to the quicker release are generally better for transparency's sake. And, you know, that's one of the reforms that people are calling for.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things that Chief Gannon said today during the press conference when he was asked why the video was released so quickly. He said, in the public interest and in the interest of transparency, which would lead me to believe that police chiefs, police leaderships across the country, they really can do it whenever they want to do it.
Say again,
Ron.
Of course they can. And if they think it's going to be in the interest of somehow or another justifying what the event that happened that involved their office as well as the department, then they're going to release it. The real question is, are you going to release it that quickly when it doesn't look like it's something that you can capitalize on?
Right. And here, the statement she was making, oh, it's a mistake, you know, or, oh, I meant to shoot a taser. All of those audio clips were in support of the statement that this was a mistake. Yeah. By the police chief. So there's clearly a reason for releasing that.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Artie, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Artie. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Harold. Gentlemen,
sure.
I'd like to go back to the question of the COVID versus pre-COVID time frame in terms of expiration of license plates and licenses. And I wanted to offer for our discussion tonight that in the state of Maryland, the governor has issued a state of emergency whereby if your licenses or license plates are expired, they are not really expired until at least 90 days after the state of emergency is lifted. And my comment here tonight is, I can't imagine that any other state, including the state of Minnesota, is so far behind Maryland that they are not aware of this. And, of course, police officers and other officers in positions of authority should be the first ones to know that. And so, this thing has disturbed me, and I just don't know where to land on this, because if we have police officers who are not aware of what the governors of the states are issuing, then where does that leave the rest of us?
Gentlemen?
They don't know. They don't know. I mean, there's not the flow of information that we think takes place. If that was the case, the incident in Virginia wouldn't have taken place. In my opinion, having been a police officer, if I was to pull a person over who was driving a vehicle and didn't see a tag, and I know in the District of Columbia and in Virginia too, you can't operate a vehicle without a tag. But the minute I get out of my car and see a tag paper pasted or taped on the back of a window, then that stop is over with, because that was the only reason for the stop. That there was no other reason for the stop. See, what happens too many times is that these individuals go beyond their authority in relationship to enforcing the law. That's one reason why I mentioned earlier, Harold, is that what we need to do in the reform restructuring context is to take the responsibility of traffic enforcement out of the hands of the police officer and give it to the civilians.
So while you gentlemen were talking, I called on my producer at the end of my arms, and according to the Department of Public Services in Minnesota, it says to review vehicle registration for car pickup, et cetera, et cetera. They must display their registration stickers by the 10th of the following month. That is, Minnesotans have until the last day of the expiration month to renew their vehicle registration. They must display their registration stickers by the 10th of the following month. We do not know when those tags expired.
That's right.
Yeah, but that, so we can't really pass a judgment on when that happened. But again, you know, according to the law, you have until the 10th of the following month. And so, that's one of the issues. But certainly, Artie, a thoughtful question that you were, sharing with us.
Yeah, sure. Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
I'm in the DMV area, and in the state of Virginia. Virginia has a similar state of emergency that Maryland has.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know we're not talking about the Virginia case tonight. We're talking about the Minnesota case, but we're also talking obliquely about the Virginia case, and Virginia has issued the same.
But listen to what I said, though. Listen to what I said and what he stopped him for. He stopped him because he did not see a tag. He didn't see the tag.
That's the Virginia case.
Okay.
He did not see the tag because the tag wasn't in the usual place.
It was so in the window.
It was in the window.
Yes.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Right. It wasn't expired.
Yeah.
But there are times when individual companies, car companies or whatever, do take the tag to the window. And if he had been doing his real job, he would have noticed the one in the window when it wasn't on the usual place.
Yeah. And to the point about Maryland and relaxation of rules and regulations, I had to get my real ID last month. DMV is open, so let us be aware. We're not talking about Minnesota. We're talking about Maryland, and so those folks who think, who are listening to this conversation, who think, well, yes, we are still in the middle of the pandemic, and my tags have expired, and I have some kind of grace that I heard about. There is no grace in the state of Maryland. Get it done. DMV is open. So be aware. Yeah. Artie, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. Let me grab one more phone call here. D. Clark calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was just noticing when I looked at the tape, I tried to look at it when you can, as much as possible.
Sure.
And it looks like when the two policemen walked to the car, the two policemen, the policeman that gets Dante out the car, he has plenty of time. Dante puts his arms back, and the policeman has plenty of time to get the cuffs on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to be kind of, take it a little while, and then the police woman comes out, and she's the one saying warrant and all that. And then when she walks up, the policeman has full control of Dante, but she comes, she puts her hand on Dante's arm.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like with her saying what he's saying, and that seems like what instigates him to jump into the car. I mean, the policeman had it under full control. Didn't seem like she needed to put her hand on him at all. So that was just my thought. So, then she says, but, you never know if that's true or that's just been said to make it look good. Just like when you can see sometimes when they grab people, like, for instance, then they're put them in a car, but they're squeezing on them and pulling, saying, settle down, but they're squeezing their backs and pulling on them, and they're making it difficult for the person to,
As I said in the beginning of the program, there seemed to be a great many things that went wrong in this police stop, and the way that it ended has been tragic, to say to say the absolute least. Real quick, Ron, I have a question for you, and then I want to get a final comment from Justin as well. By the way, D. Clark, thank you so much for your phone call. You know, one of the other issues, and maybe I'm watching too much television or I don't know, but are police officers required, if they see a weapon, knife, gun, what have you, to shout gun before pulling their weapon? I'm talking about deadly force.
No, if an individual, I don't know, honestly, I don't know about that, but if an individual has a gun in his hand,
mm-hmm.
the police are required to say, stop police or drop the gun.
I see.
They're required to say that. Now, and most of the time they do. Sometimes they don't, but if the gun isn't in your hand, you can say to the individual, like, if you think that there's a gun, you have the person move out of the car, and then you have grounds to search the car.
I see.
And especially the area in and around where the individual is sitting in the car, you can search that area.
Real quick, Justin, 15 seconds, final thoughts on what we've seen today.
Well, one thing I'll say, Ryan, we agree that we have to take police out of police stops, or traffic stops here in D.C. We can't go to Minnesota and change all the things that are happening there, but we here where we live, we got to make a difference, and that's what we got to do. So let's work together on that.
I appreciate your time, gentlemen. Justin Hansford and Ron Hampton, thank you so much for talking to us. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, April 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.